You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Howdy Modi is of course now stuff of legend. 50,000 Indians in a Houston stadium coming out to see a politician. It's a sort of thing rock stars dream of. It's a sort of thing you would expect Beyonce and Jay-Z and Billy Joel to bring out. It's a sort of thing Donald Trump dreams of. And sure enough, where there are crowds, there comes Trump. It's like an antenna goes off, and there he was. Trump was the opening act for the main performance that was Modi. By now, you all know the Father of the Nation episode, Father of India, if I'm not wrong, several primetime news shows have ensured that you know about that particular episode. But if you have a delicate constitution and want to avoid damage to your eardrums and therefore stay away from those shows, Trump called Modi the Father of India. And the rest is, of course, loud television history. You have by now also read what happened to comedian Hasan Minhaj. Now, Hasan Minhaj was on Late Night with Seth Meyers. At that very taping, I was at also. It was a fun episode to watch. And he did recount a tale of how he and his team were prevented from attending the Modi rally because of the things that he had said about the administration. Now, we suggest that you go and look at that piece of television. But on this edition of Digging Deeper, we're not just talking about Howdy Modi. We will try and examine the relationship between India and the US. The first thing that we will talk about, though, is going to be the evolution in the relationship between Prime Minister Modi and the United States. There has certainly been a metamorphosis in this particular relationship since the Bush and Obama years to now Trump. Just like there has been a studied change in the casting of Modi from a politician to now a statesman. How much does Modi need the blessing of the US and how much does India still need to rely on the US for its own economic benefits? These are some of the questions we will address on this edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control. My name is Rakesh Sharma and this is Howdy Modi and what it means for Indo-US relations.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
It is pretty much guaranteed now that Narendra Modi will never be able to shrug off the 2002 post-Godhra riots. He was exonerated by the special investigation team, but the stain shall forever remain. A few years after the riots, Modi faced humiliation from a country that the UPA government and Prime Minister Manmohan Singh in particular courted pretty aggressively in a post-Cold War world. US-India relations hit a low after the Bill Clinton era, and Singh was attempting to bring the two countries closer, a proposition that George W. Bush was not entirely averse to. As that relationship went from strength to strength, Narendra Modi was the one person in politics having a not-so-great time. He wanted to visit the Gujarati NRI community in the US. Annie Gowan reported in the Washington Post, and I quote, Modi applied for and was denied a diplomatic visa to travel to the United States to address a hotel owners association and business leaders in March 2005. U.S. officials said at the time that he was excluded under a provision of the Immigration and Nationality Act that makes any government official who was responsible for or directly carried out at any time particularly severe violations of religious freedom ineligible for a visa. Unquote. That was a serious snub from the most powerful country on the planet. In fact, so severe was the decision that it wasn't until Modi became Prime Minister in 2014, 9 years later, that it was overturned. Much like the US, the EU and the UK also denied him visas, a rule that stayed in place until 2012, 7 years after that. According to a report in the Huffington Post from 2015, economist Jagdish Bhagwati told NDTV, and I quote, the visa was denied to him at the request of the UPA government, and Modi is an informed and practical person. He knew it too, unquote. The report went on to explain, Bhagwati is of the opinion that filing a mild complaint by the Manmohan Singh government on the Modi visa issue was not enough. The fact that they did not take a tit-for-tat approach means that they were not serious. The Americans was simply obliging. Unquote. A report by The Hindu in 2012 stated, and I quote, after India urged the United States in March 2005 to reconsider its decision to revoke the visa of Gujarat Chief Minister Narendra Modi, the US Embassy made an action request to Washington seeking a review of the case. However, the action request cable of March 18, 2005 also had a revealing accompanying note, which said, Post does not expect any change, but would appreciate a cable telling the government of India, we took a fresh look and decided to maintain our decision. Unquote. The report adds that India's Foreign Secretary Shyam Saran took exception to such a rejection and conveyed that the refusal had already incited a controversy and threatened to spark just the kind of divisiveness the US alleges Modi himself facilitated. Unquote. The US Deputy Chief of Mission at the embassy, Robert O. Blake, reportedly clarified to Saran the two-part American decision, saying, and I quote, the refusal of the A2, that is the visa, and the revocation of the B1, B2, also visas, highlighted that we had acted in accordance with our own law and democratic constitution. The US had taken into consideration independent reports, including that of India's own National Human Rights Commission. Mr. Blake went on to say the decision was not taken capriciously, but involved many people in Washington. Unquote. Courtesy WikiLeaks, we now know that the US Embassy gave its own view in a diplomatic cable, which was not inaccurate. It went on to say, and I quote, the Congress has long viewed Modi as a vulnerable target and will, at the appropriate time, use the visa incident as further ammunition against him. Both Congress and the BJP particularly value the US-India relationship, and Modi's America bashing has made many nervous. Both parties will likely move to ensure that the negative impact on the relationship from this incident is minimal. With Modi's position deteriorating, the BJP leadership could decide to quietly push him aside at the appropriate time. This could become a further liability for BJP President L.K. Advani, who was the senior party leader most visibly supporting Modi. Unquote. I did mention Modi bashing just a little bit earlier because, yes, there was a time when Modi disliked America. At that point in time, Modi, an America-bashing politician, did exist. Hard to believe now, isn't it? Let's check out that angle for a little bit. After being denied a visa and upset, Modi lashed out. According to a report in the Asian Age in 2005, Modi said, and I quote, how can the US refuse me a visa and treat Musharraf as a state guest? Unquote. The report went on to add that the cancellation of the visa triggered a fierce reaction, with Mr. Modi accusing the US of humiliating India's constitution, sovereignty, and democratic traditions. An incensed Modi went on to add, and I quote, no court of India or the world has passed any judgment against either the Gujarat government or its chief minister. The American government, which prides itself on being a democracy, has indulged in the misdeed of insulting the Indian constitution and the 5 crore people of Gujarat. Unquote. That wasn't all. He even criticized the US's intelligence gathering abilities. Modi went on to say, and I quote, the World Trade Center attack was a glaring example. The country was caught napping. The US is wielding the stick on selective information gathered by its network. It seems the same yardstick has been applied in my case. Unquote. Pretty strong words from a man now touted as a great friend of the United States of America. Narendra Modi was the only Indian citizen ever denied a visa to the US under that specific provision. But he seems to have taken it on the chin and, in typically pragmatic fashion, moved on. Dr. Bhagwati went on to note, at that time, Modi didn't come across as someone who held on to old memories and grudges. Unquote. That pragmatism would turn things around for Modi considerably. 2014 was clearly the game changer. After serving as Chief Minister of Gujarat from 2001 to 2014, Modi won the general election and became Prime Minister. That meant he could travel to the United States. It was unthinkable that the Obama government would deny him a visa then, and it did not. The Washington Post reported that President Barack Obama put the visa issue to rest by calling Modi to congratulate him on his victory and inviting him to the White House. At his swearing-in, Modi made headlines by inviting all the leaders of neighboring South Asian nations, including Pakistan Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. In September 2014, Modi visited the United States for the first time as an Indian minister. He had been to the US a few times individually, but that was before entering the political arena. In 2014, he had a private dinner with Obama toward the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in his company and headlined that famous event at Madison Square Garden in New York, which was attended by approximately 20,000 members of the Indian diaspora. The following year, in the city of San Jose in 2015, he had a similar reception. While the rock star-like appearances appeared over the top, with more than one cringe-inducing moment, it was like a triumphant tour for a man who was derided widely until May 2014. More importantly, it was a turning point for India-US relations. Let's get down to how Modi actually affected a change in what looked like a redux of past failures. For that, we must examine what the experts say. In this case, a person who is part of the American establishment and also understands the way India functions. A man born in India and quite likely to become the next American ambassador to India, Ashley J. Tellis. Tellis, a former senior advisor to the US Department of State, made an interesting observation. He claimed that as a consequence of a series of diplomatic disasters during the UPA era, like the Devyani Cobra Grey fiasco, the liability clause in the civil nuclear deal, India's rejection of American military craft in favor of the French Rafale, India-US relationship had suffered. Tellis went on to write, and I quote, "Not only were US-India relations completely rudderless during this period, as skeptics of the relationship like then-Defense Minister A.K. Antony impeded further progress, but India's own progress appeared hamstrung as myriad corruption scandals took the wind out of the government's sails." Unquote. Tellis, a senior fellow with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, makes another trenchant observation. He said, and I quote, "Narendra Modi's political instincts allowed him to quickly appreciate the extent to which US-India relations had fallen around the time he took office. Despite his limited experience with Washington up to that point, he understood that the pervasive frustration in both capitals did not bode well for his larger project of revitalizing India, balancing the threats posed by growing Chinese power and expanding New Delhi's influence on the international stage. Consummating India's resurgence would require sustained American support for kickstarting its economic growth as well as for expanding its sway abroad." Based entirely on his conviction that he must do whatever is necessary to advance India's interests, Modi, brushing away any wounded amour propre, set out to repair the US-India relationship with alacrity in three ways that would affect both the style and the substance of India's foreign policy. Unquote. Firstly, Modi invested considerable effort in building relationships with his peers internationally. We know and mock his gregarious gestures of friendship with men like Obama, when he called him Barack, remember? Benjamin Netanyahu, and of course Shinzo Abe. Remember that swing moment with Xi Jinping? Cringe. Or that whirlwind stop in Pakistan when he walked hand in hand with Nawaz Sharif. Whatever his flaws, you can't accuse Modi of lacking in effort, including what appeared like a gay wedding at a temple. Tellis went on to explain, and I quote, "He invested heavily in developing strong friendships with his American counterparts, first Obama and now Trump, guided by the logic that even if US and Indian national interests did not always cohere, the latter would always come out ahead if the individual steering policy in Washington were favorably disposed towards India. When strategic convergence between the two countries existed, warm personal ties could push the envelope to produce even better policy outcomes for India. When strategic dissonance persisted on some issues, the camaraderie between the two leaders would help to minimize the effect of frictions that would inevitably arise. By focusing on developing a personal rapport with his American counterparts, Modi personalized the conduct of India's international relations in ways not seen in decades to the advantage of India's interests as a whole." Unquote. So first, building personal relationships with peers internationally. Secondly, Modi has, according to Ashley Tellis, without apology or embarrassment, emphasized solidarity among democracies as a leitmotif of India's new engagement with the world, which explains his repeated outreach to Japan, Israel, and USA. Although Israel and democracy, oh well. Tellis went on to observe, "Modi has more openly allied India with other democratic partners and, in a remarkable evolution from times past, encouraged his counterparts to consider not merely increased bilateral economic cooperation, but rather initiatives aimed at bringing security and prosperity to other parts of the globe. Such enthusiasm has been welcomed by his American interlocutors, at least prior to President Trump." So if that was the second, which is to express solidarity among democracies, what was the third, according to Ashley Tellis? In a huge shift from Modi jettisoned any remaining pretensions towards non-alignment, Tellis went on to write, and I quote, "Modi has quietly but resolutely moved India away from the rhetoric of non-alignment to the practice of strategic partnership. This does not imply that India is content to be a camp follower of the US or, for that matter, any other great power. To the contrary, India has ploughed its own course in foreign policy, dictated by a sense of its own interests. as it has moved forward in its quest to become a leading power. However, Modi has not shied away from developing and nurturing partnerships with other nations, most importantly, the US. Unlike those votaries of non-alignment who argue that India should be cautious about developing special affiliations with great powers, because, you know, that might possibly constrain India's freedom of action in the future, Modi has freely reached out to the United States as well as Japan, Israel, Germany and France in the hope of building a robust strategic partnership that could enhance India's power and standing. In many ways, this represents a continuation of India's traditional grand strategy, but with one important difference. India no longer exhibits diffidence in affirming its special relationships with some critical partners. Given this refreshing change in Indian attitude, it is not surprising that leaders as different as Barack Obama and Donald Trump have been united in their pursuit of a new relationship with India. Unquote. So that then is the meat of the matter. Modi's investment in substantive changes, policy-wise as well as personally, meant that India is seen and indeed treated differently. And that freshness, Telus speaks of, has borne fruit. He went on to declare, Telus that is, there is little doubt that the US and India played pivotal roles in the discussions leading up to the Paris Agreement. Prime Minister Modi, recognizing the significance of securing an international consensus on mitigating climate change, pushed back against many in his own country to commit India to concrete pledges that made the final compact possible. Modi's willingness to accept India's global responsibilities in mitigating climate change was equally vital to success in the lead-up to Paris, a concession unimaginable under India's tradition of third-world posturing. Unquote. It's a separate matter, of course, now that Donald Trump has chosen not to engage with the international community on the subject of climate change, having even withdrawn the United States from the Paris Accord and, famously, not attending the meetings at the United Nations about climate change this time. The second example of remarkable success was India's cooperation with the USA in defining the security environment in the Indo-Pacific. While this term has taken on new life under Trump, the agreement between the US and India occurred under President Obama. Telus went on to claim Modi's active involvement in shaping the US-India joint strategic vision for the Asia-Pacific and the Indian Ocean region was couched in innocuous language, but its import was momentous. He said, and I quote, India not only reaffirmed its commitment to the freedom of navigation and overflight, especially in the South China Sea, where threats from China are particularly acute, but it declared its willingness to contribute towards larger diplomatic and regional integration in order to bolster long-term peace and prosperity for all. Unquote. Ashley Telus concluded by saying that the US-India relationship encompasses the most intense bilateral engagement that New Delhi enjoys with any nation. But he warns that the general reluctance within India to engage with the US could derail, or at the very least, slow down considerably the progress that has been made. He goes on to say that oversight of the relationship by the Prime Minister himself is advisable. As Harsh Pant, a political analyst with the New Delhi-based Observer Research Foundation, explained, Modi was pragmatic in his decision and decided that India and he, as Prime Minister, could not afford to ignore the United States. He clearly understood that India needs the US to reach its goals. All things considered, that is a massive change in stance by the US establishment. While Modi is still vilified by opponents and critics, and several of them with very, very good reason, especially after the abrogation of Article 370 in Kashmir, the fact does remain that Modi's friendship with Obama, which saw Barack Obama accept the invitation to be special guest at the 2015 Republic Day parade, transformed the nature of India-US relations. And Modi's camaraderie with the notoriously irritating and acerbic Donald Trump is commendable. Some might label it obsequious, but the benefits of such a close friendship are obvious. With no end in sight to the US-China trade war, India stands to gain from the Modi-Trump Mutual Admiration Society. Although how much is mutual, how much is admiration, it couldn't be said, but the performances of it certainly seem to indicate to that. A Reuters CNBC report yesterday claimed negotiators are trying to hash out a deal for Modi and Trump to sign at the United Nations General Assembly in New York on the 27th of September. Another instance of benefit was pointed out in an op-ed in the Hindustan Times, which said, a new twist has been the rise of the US as a source of oil and gas. What matters less than actual shipments of hydrocarbons is that America's shale story has suppressed energy prices to India's advantage. This is a metaphor for what a closer relationship with the US provides India, the best possible geopolitical anchor in a time of remarkable international instability. Mr. Modi has also understood it is the best external backer for his ambitious domestic agenda, ranging from the economy to technology. The US is the indispensable partner for the rise of India. Unquote. Let's not also forget that the US's considerable diplomatic support to India in the battle over Article 370. That in itself has been a huge win for a politician once blacklisted by the same country. As one analysis noted, the United States is India's primary source of foreign capital, technology and investments. It continues to be the most favored destination for Indian students and immigrants. The US sells much of the cutting-edge technology for India's defense forces. It is the primary external partner on intelligence and counter-terrorism assistance. India's Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar has described India-US ties as a glass which is 90% full rather than a glass which is 10% empty. A report about the Houston event in Mint went on to note, and I quote, "The high watermark was, of course, Modi walking arm in arm with US President Donald Trump before a packed stadium of over 50,000 people chanting Modi, Modi. That both Trump and the US lawmakers sat through Modi's almost an hour-long speech was a statement also in itself." Unquote. Whether or not this would lead to bettering in US-India relations, especially as the NRIs would see it in terms of H-1B visas and green cards and paths to citizenship, etc., remains to be seen. But as of now, like loves to hang out with like. The Modi and Trump relationship and the ye dosti hum nahi chhodenge type hand-in-hand walking continues to march on.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.